Today, it's our monthly visit with ornithologist Vernon Locks, author of Bird News, Vagrants and Visitors on a Peculiar Island. He writes columns for the Cape Cod Times and the Enquirer and Mirror. Vern's the resident naturalist and land manager at the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket, which is where he is this morning. Good morning, Vern.
Good morning, Mindy.
That wind blowing you around a little bit this morning?
It's pretty fairly impressive out here this morning. It's blowing, I think Dan just said 17. I think it shows more, it feels more like 25 gusting to 40 out here. It'll blow, my bird feeders are sort of out straight. They're hanging like a kite out there.
I know you were out this morning. When it's windy like that, does that, I would imagine that impacts what you're seeing, right?
Well, you know, Nantucket being so far 30 miles out to sea here, we're totally dependent. In the fall migration, birds don't want to come out here, really. We're sort of like a life ring stuck out off the coast of Cape Cod, and we need strong westerly winds to basically blow the young birds on their first migration a little further out to sea, and then they all turn and they find Nantucket. So whenever the wind is howling from the west, while maybe not necessarily the best thing for the birds, although I'm not sure it's bad for them, but certainly we see many, many more birds when it's blowing from the west. So this morning I got up at dawn and was down at the southwest tip of the island, and there were clouds of pine siskins flying around, little tiny finches from the far north that are invading this year. I had a couple of peregrine falcons hunting right by 8 o'clock in the morning. They were eating breakfast, and there were a lot of stuff getting blown around in the wind. Whenever this wind dies from the west, then everything that got blown out here will basically make its way to the west end of the island. And then most of these birds are nocturnal migrants tonight. If, you know, whenever the wind lets go and comes from light northwest, these birds will get up in the air and make their way south and west. So
it's bird news.
Pretty exciting time of year.
Yeah, it sure is. And if you have a bird story question you would like to ask Vern, give us a call. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. So this, of course, is for birders. This is the time of year because this is, you know, where you can see who knows what just about anywhere, right?
That's exactly right. In fact, it used to be that September, even Labor Day weekend to mid-September was the best time. But, you know, whether it's global warming, certainly there is evidence to show that birds are moving of many more species later in the season. And I think the best birding of the year now, at least it has been for about a decade, probably starts at Columbus Day weekend and continues for a couple of weeks till late October. We get more species of birds and many more and larger numbers.
Right.
So in that regard, we're very lucky. The second annual Nantucket Birding Festival starts a week from today, week from tonight. That should be a really, we're bringing in leaders from all over the place, and we've got, we hope to really scour the island and find not only lots of common birds, but hopefully a bunch of rarities as well.
If you get some west wind, who knows?
if it was up to me, I would turn up the volume on this wind meter and keep it howling out of the west until the festival starts and then drop it off.
There you go.
And the island would just be coated in birds.
Yeah, unfortunately, you cannot control the weather.
That's right. This is
so, Vern, Columbus Day weekend, there was some interesting sightings and bandings over on South Monomoy.
They started last year. A group started, there used to be a banding station there back in the 60s, down by the lighthouse on the south end of the island. And a group of a small number of people started working in conjunction with the Fish and Wildlife Service last year, scouted it out, and they've been out there banding, I believe, since late August. And over this past weekend, it was raining rare western birds. They had a little warbler called a black-throated gray warbler, which breeds up in the coniferous forest in the mountains in the Sierra Nevadas. They had one of these hit their nets. They had a Townsend's warbler, another bird that nests in that same habitat. They don't get any further east than like Montana. They had a Townsend's warbler, and then they also had this frugivore, sort of a fruit-eating, a weird thrush-like thing called a Townsend solitaire. And they banded one of those, which are all just like right off the charts. And to have three of those in a couple of days in the nets really speaks to there must have been a huge movement of birds from the Pacific Northwest that got blown out to the eastern seaboard. And then once they get here, it's funny, places like Monomoy, Nantucket, the west end of the Vineyard, the cliffs at Gay Head, or even anywhere on the Outer Cape, even Woods Hole in the Elizabeth Islands, Cuttyhunk is quite a vagrant trap. Once a bird starts flying the wrong way, because a lot of these birds, it's probably their first migration, they get up in a northwest wind, and they say, hey, this is pretty cool. let's keep the tailwind. And they just keep flying east until they hit a real physical border, which is what the coastline is.
Right.
Once they hit the coast, if you're a little bird, the ocean has nothing but trouble for you. There's no place to land. There's nothing to eat. There's no fresh water to drink. So they must turn and stay and follow the coastline. In other words, it's a barrier. And so all these birds basically move right down the coastline, sometimes hitting the outer islands. So.
Wow.
It's an exciting time of year.
Yeah, you know, when you mention this bird banding on South Monomoy, you would think that that's something that you wouldn't have stopped, because that's a great place to see all kinds of birds.
That's true, but banding requires, and of course, South Monomoy is designated a wilderness area.
Mm-hmm.
You can go visit for the day, but you're supposed to stay in certain areas. It's a hard place to get to. There's no place to stay.
Right.
Unless the Fish and Wildlife Service gives you permission to stay in the lighthouse, you've got to bring your own food. There's a lot of difficulties, and it's very expensive to get down there. So Jim Baird, who was the vice president of Massachusetts Audubon, used to ban there with Ian Nisbet back in the 60s. But there has not been a banding operation there in about 45 or 50 years. So
yeah.
I'm hoping they start it up again, because it's just crazy stuff. It's like there's some islands off of San Francisco, the Farallon Islands, just out in the Pacific, about 25 miles off the coast. And more birds have showed up on those rocks. I think like every North American bird and half the birds in Siberia, because they're out there banding. And so
wow.
We have the same potential here, I think.
Yeah, I think so. We're talking with Vern Lox. If you have a bird question or a bird story, we'd love to hear it. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. On the 5th, there was a redheaded woodpecker seen at the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. And you were mentioning to me the other day you saw one, and it got me thinking. I mean, I've seen them, but you don't see them very often. Are they not so common around here?
Well, red-headed woodpeckers are birds that are very common in Ohio and Missouri and eastern Kansas, and they really are. They're aptly named. Their whole upper half of their body, their whole head, front and back, is bright red, and then they have these huge white wing patches. Really a nice-looking bird. They make some really, what I think, are very pleasant noises. I love hearing them call. And we get them, they're quite accidental. In fact, none were known to nest in Massachusetts anywhere this year, which is, Massachusetts is pretty big if you get out in the Berkshires. And so occasionally in the fall, with strong westerly winds, sometimes without such strong westerly winds, we get some immature red-headed woodpeckers being seen. So
yeah, Jenny says she has it at her house here in Woods Hole. Jenny says she has some at her house here in Woods Hole. Nesting,
she has
Jenny?
Some?
You have one,
okay,
or two?
Jenny.
She doesn't know. She says she sees two of them, she's saying.
Well, she's going to take, she might, I think she's referring to red-bellied woodpeckers.
Are you thinking red-bellied, Jenny? She doesn't know.
Okay.
Okay, red-headed. Tell us the difference between the two.
Well, again, it's always great to have a field guide handy, but they're really different. A red-bellied woodpecker is really poorly named, because the male in breeding plumage, if you're probably holding it in your hand, or you're really close, has a tiny little reddish wash to its belly.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing, a red-belly woodpecker is like a total misnomer for it. They have they're a pretty good-sized woodpecker, about the size of a hairy woodpecker. They have a striped, a ladder back, black and white streaking. Big. There's one calling. Oh, yeah, see if you can find her. Anyway, and red-bellies are a southern bird that are expanding their range to the north, and they first became colonized Cape Cod only maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago. When I was growing up, there were no red-bellied woodpeckers.
Wow.
It was really a rare bird in Massachusetts. And now they're quite a common breeder, especially in places like Woods Hole, Falmouth. The Mid-Cape area has a few. They get scarcer as you move out the Outer Cape. But, I mean, they breed all over the Vineyard now. And they're actually not that uncommon. I think we have a few pairs nesting on Nantucket.
Jenny just she looked at the picture. She said she has the red-bellied, not the red-headed.
I would say. If she has a couple of red-headed woodpeckers, Jenny, I want to see the pictures.
You probably want to come see them in person if that's what you're
at. Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I get the little downy woodpeckers at my house. I think every once in a while I get a flicker, but I get a lot of those little downy. They're cute little birds, too.
Yeah, the woodpeckers are just an amazing. Everything about them is like, wow. Mm-hmm.
I know.
How did these get there, you know?
Yeah. And the other thing, too, that people are seeing now that we, I guess, are wondering if this is the hummingbirds. We always think it's the ruby-throated hummingbird right around here. Is that right? Ruby-throated hummingbird? Is that what we have?
Well, that's the only hummingbird that's known to breed in eastern North America. And there are lots of hummingbird species as you go out west. And then, of course, as you go south, to places like Ecuador and Colombia, the numbers are truly mind-boggling. Like Ecuador has 130 species of hummingbirds. But what we've become to find out in the last decade or last 15 years, too, is that pretty much any hummingbird in Massachusetts after about September 15th, it's more likely to be one of the western birds and not a ruby-throated hummingbird. Mm. But the difficulty in identifying them is female hummingbirds, young male hummingbirds, first-year birds, are basically all, they look all the same. They're these teeny, amazingly small birds that move very fast, and they have green backs and sort of whitish-gray bellies. And there's a variation. Even if you've got them in your binoculars or a spotting scope on a feeder, there are some very subtle differences in bill length, in how the wings meet at the tail. But what's really unique about them is they all have a different tail pattern. But to see the tail pattern, you basically have to film them or with high-speed digital equipment or movie camera and freeze frame the tail.
Wow.
And there are minute differences in different tail feathers and color patterns. So a really good way to do it is to actually – there's some people that banned hummingbirds. In fact, Sue Finnegan down in Brewster has been very accommodating traveling around the Cape and going to the islands. And it doesn't, they take the hummingbird feeder and they put it in this special little trap. And of course, hummingbirds are so small. It's not like banding a normal bird. You need special training to do it. Mm-hmm. So some people have gotten hummingbird certified, basically.
Yeah.
Because handling a hummingbird is not like handling anything else.
They're so fragile. They're so tiny. Yeah. You can see where you can really hurt them.
They're impossibly small. I every time I just can't even believe how small they are.
They're so cute. And so a photo may not be able. You might not be able to tell.
Right. When they have them in the hand, then you can. They measure the length of the wing. They measure the tail feathers, and you can. Sue's gotten very good, and so have a bunch of people. And they can conclusively identify pretty much 100% of all the hummingbirds. Put a little band on it, and then you let it go. And within a few of the hummingbird seems absolutely no worse for wear. And they go right back and start feeding on the feeder and until they disappear. So, I mean, it's really we're finding out lots of information. And our whole understanding of hummingbirds in the fall has changed, 100% from just 10 years ago.
And those little hummingbirds that are banded are thinking, how did that sloth catch me?
We don't. We don't. Right. We don't even exist in a hummingbird's mind. We're like the giant tortoise.
A couple years ago, I had two baby hummingbirds flying with mom. I couldn't believe it. At first, I thought they were those little sphinx moths, But then I was like, oh my gosh, those are little baby hummingbirds. They were so small.
Wow.
Wish you could see those every year. I see the hummingbirds every year, but that's the first time I'd ever seen the babies.
Well, occasionally we get the calliope hummingbird from the west. There were a couple, and the calliope is the smallest North American hummingbird, and they make ruby throats look kind of massive.
Yeah, wow.
If you can imagine. Yeah. Of course, the smallest hummingbird in the world is a hummingbird that lives in Cuba called the bumblebee hummingbird.
Hmm.
Because it's just so incredibly small, it's hard to imagine it can be a bird,
We're talking with ornithologist Vernon Locks. Our toll-free number for your bird questions or bird stories, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. One of the things we see this time of year, Vern, is those big flocks of birds. We'll see, red-winged blackbirds flying with the crows or the grackles or the starlings, or they seem to be a whole bunch of different species flying together. Why is that?
Birds love to travel in flocks and mixed flocks because there is truly safety in numbers. This morning I saw a flock of, probably 250 blackbirds, and there was a Cooper's hawk sort of harrying them, trying to. And what if you think about it, like any of the falcons, peregrine falcons, merlins, you often see birds, starlings and blackbirds, they react in this sort of, they get into a really tight flock and they move as one, you see them sort of, it's called ululating up in the air. And the reason, there's a big defense mechanism for them because the falcon could easily just go above them and fold up its wings and rocket into the group and hit a couple. But if it did that, its wings would hit nearby birds and it might injure its wings, which would be fatal. So the hawks will not go into these dense flocks of birds. So what they do is they shadow them. If one of those birds in the flock is sick or everybody takes a left and one takes a right, you know, then that bird that took a right's in trouble and the falcon will get it.
Yeah.
But it's quite amazing to see how that works. And so the raptors are very reluctant unless they were starving. I did once see a small falcon called a merlin go into a flock of starlings on Martha's Vineyard, got above them and came right down and boom, boom, it hit two of them.
Wow.
Right in the flock on the edge and they dropped to the ground. He went down and ate them, and it didn't hurt its wings. But I figured that bird must have been starving to do that kind of a stunt.
Yeah. All right. Joan is giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. You mentioned pine siskins before, and Monday afternoon, there was this little teeny tiny bird sitting on a plant hanger right by the kitchen window, all puffed up with its head and its wing, and I couldn't even get a good look at the head. And I thought, well, this isn't long for this world. And I found it dead Tuesday morning in the backyard, so I took it down to Wellfleet, and it was a pine siskin. I haven't seen any around my yard. I have lots of finches here, but no pine siskins yet in the yard. But there was this sole one, and Mark said it was a juvenile. And it probably hadn't had enough food before it left the north and came down, and it probably died of starvation.
I actually saw a bird do exactly what you described coming in off the ocean this last weekend. But nearby there were flocks of over 200 pine siskins flying around. But this one was obviously not doing well. Mm-hmm. And what's happened? Pine siskins and red-breasted nuthatches are in huge numbers along the coast. That you must live. You're not down on a beach somewhere. You're inland a little bit.
I'm near Pleasant Bay.
You're near Pleasant Bay, okay.
Lots of woods around me.
Yeah, I mean, right now at my bird feeders out here on Nantucket, I've got 150 pine siskins covering all my bird feeders, and they're all over the ground.
Wow.
I've never seen it. It's like an invasion. They go up, and it looks like a little smoky cloud there. Mm-hmm. And a gentleman down the street has just as many. So, I mean, right in my neighborhood right now, I know of at least like 400 pine siskins.
Wow.
And
well,
then
there's
others migrating over. I'm sorry?
Said that they had a lot of pine siskins up at Wellfleet on Tuesday morning also. But I've been noticing a very interesting behavior on my summer resident birds just before they leave. On the 28th of September, the towhees were up here on the deck getting themselves a really good bath, the bird bath, and the next day they were gone. The catbird came in on the 29th. Tremendous bath. It was amazing it could even fly after it got finished, and it was gone. So why would they do that?
Well, birds, birds love water, and they love taking
baths.
They love it to protect, it protects their feathers. They got a good cleaning, and then they probably sat and preened for a couple hours, and it sounds like they were getting prepared to make sure the outer hull, so to speak, was in good shape for the flight.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet they probably took off that night.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting that you're writing this stuff down.
No,
you've
it's
got
great.
The dates.
Yeah.
That's good. And I'm glad you're reporting to Mark up there. You're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Well, I also report to the feeder watch at Cornell.
Excellent. Thanks, Joan.
But the other thing is we had another towhee showed up because it was the male and female that were in on the 28th bathing, but then they were gone. And then this past Saturday, a male towhee showed up in the yard, and he was gone yesterday morning.
Yeah. All right, Joan, thanks for keeping an eye out there and sharing your news with us. We appreciate
that.
Jan is calling from Yarmouthport. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I've got a question about a bird.
Sure.
And that is that yesterday in the Bearberry near my bird feeder, there was a small green bird. I couldn't get a picture of it. I tried to, but it just blended into the Bearberry. It was the exact same color as the Bearberry. It was foraging in the Bearberry. It had a yellow belly, a small yellow eye stripe, and an all-green back and wings. I couldn't see any striping on it, and I couldn't see any marks on its wings at all, any different colored feathers. And
Vern, can I guess what this is? Can I guess? Can I guess?
Yes, sure.
Is it a yellow-breasted chat?
Doesn't sound like it.
Oh, darn. I heard the yellow breast and the green.
Brown? A chat would be browner, right?
No, a chat would be bigger. It would be bright yellow, like almost a neon yellow orange on the breast, with a big eye ring and a line out to the eye. It would have a bright green back with no wing bars, and it would have a really white under tail coverage. So white belly. Did you see it eating anything?
It appeared to be eating bugs off the Bearberry. It was kind of using its beak to forage in around the leaves of the Bearberry.
Bearberry is also known as hog cranberry. It's a low-growing shrub that it spreads out on the ground. Are you talking about barberry?
No, I'm talking about Bearberry. I have it planted in my back as part of my native planting.
Right, and it grows right down flush on the ground.
Right. Right on top of the ground, and it gets a little red berry on it, but it didn't appear to be eating the berries. The other birds get the berries pretty quickly anyway when they're.
Was this a very small bird?
It was a very small bird. At first, I thought, well, maybe it's maybe there's a warbler in a fall plumage. I have lots of yellow warblers and common yellow throats around the house all summer.
And you know what those are? I think you were looking at what's a female or an immature black pole warbler. You described it pretty well. It's with the yellowy breast and a little eye line. And did you happen to notice its legs or the color of its legs or feet?
I couldn't see them.
Right, because they were down. It was feeding on small insects there, little aphids or whatever. It was obviously eating almost like microscopic bugs, but they do that a lot in the fall. And take a look in a field guide. You're describing it pretty well, a black pole warbler.
Yeah.
Immature black pole warbler. Cool.
Great.
Okay, yep.
Jan, thanks for calling, Jan. We've got a couple people on hold and not a lot of time left. And I just want Robin in Wellfleet called to tell us that she's getting a lot of red-breasted nuthatches at her feeder for the first time, and she wonders if you could talk a little bit about them.
Red-breasted nuthatches are another, just like the pine siskins, breed basically across the boreal forest up in the taiga that runs across southern Canada and up into central Canada. This summer, for some reason, there was the spruce trees up there had a terrible year for producing cones and seeds that would be in the cones in the eastern part of Canada. And starting in July this year, red-breasted nuthatches started moving south in huge numbers. This right now in mid-October, I've never seen so many coming this far south. And then the pine siskins follow them because there was a total lack of food. These birds generally stay north if the cone crop is good. Mm. And this year there was a total failure in the eastern part of Canada, and all those birds fled south rather than try to spend the winter where they would starve up there.
Mm. All right, John is calling from Falmouth. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a recurring problem with woodpeckers. They seem to like my house, and I'm wondering if you have a suggestion as to what I can do to get rid of them.
You obviously have a clear trim on the house?
I've got white trim.
You have white trim that's painted?
Yes.
And they're pecking into the white trim?
No, they're going for the shingles. I've got some of the shingles are like 45 years old, and they seem to like that.
Well, right. They're only there because there's food for them. So those shingles probably have some sort of beetle or wasp or something nesting under there, and they're eating the larvae. They can actually hear the stuff crawling around in the woods. So I hate to tell you, but I think it might be time to reshingle that side of the house.
No, boy.
that'll take
one
care
other
of the
issue, too. I have my feet are out, and I'm loaded with finches, and they seem to be very territorial, and they're loath to move when any other birds come along.
Are they house finches or gold finches?
I'm not sure. There's some purple finches and whatever. And they seem to be all about the same size. But mm-hmm. they will really actually fend other birds off.
Well, that's some. I think you're seeing house finches because purple finches are really quite rare here. You may have one at your feeder, but and the house finches do. They travel. They like to stay in flocks, and they can be kind of aggressive. You know, there isn't really much you can do about it.
Yeah, just, better than having those house sparrows, I think. I'd rather have the finches.
They make nice noises, and they're pretty.
All right, let's talk to Diane, who's calling from Centerville. Hi, Diane.
Hi there. My question is about ducks. I was on Nauset Beach on Saturday. There all day, beautiful day out there, and I noticed there was a patch of ducks. I'm pretty ignorant when it comes to birds. They look like ducks. They stayed in the same spot. Nothing would deter them, the same spot. All day out in front, motorboat would come by. Eventually, the ducks would come back. My question is, why stay in that same exact position?
Well, I think you actually know the answer to this already. Why would they stay stationary? Because they were right off. They were over a mussel bed. That's
oh,
where
really?
they that was because their food. Pretend there was a bird feeder underwater,
uh-huh.
and that's what they. What they do is those were probably white-winged scoters or common eiders that you were seeing, big uh-huh. sea ducks, and they dive under, they go underwater and they fly with their wings sort of half open. They get uh-huh. down to the mussel bed and they tear off them, they yank the mussel out, and then they try to swallow it before they get to the surface so the gulls don't steal it from them.
Oh, and, no kidding. Interesting. Okay, yeah. thanks. That's yeah. all I wanted
yep.
to know.
All right.
Thank you.
Diane,
well,
thanks.
I'm just, I wanted to talk. We have a little more time.
We have a couple more, but we're not going to get to them. But you want to, real quick, folks.
No,
want
I was just
to...
going to talk about how they digest the mussels, but
okay.
we'll do that another time.
We'll do that. I'll make a note of that we can talk about that next month. But you've got the Bird Festival coming up next weekend, and folks want more information on that, they can go to the Linda Loring Nature Foundation website, right?
Correct. There's a few spots left for it. If somebody wanted to sign up last minute, we still could accommodate a few people.
All right. Ornithologist Vernon Locks, who joins us once a month to bring us up to date on all the latest bird news. Vern is the resident naturalist and land manager at the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket, which is where he joined us from this morning. Thank you, Vern.
Thank you, Mindy. See you soon.
All righty. I'm Mindy
Bye.
Todd. Thanks for listening.
Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point WCAI. The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Dan Treidel and Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR station, a service of WGBH.